grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to episode 210 of the Dudes and Beer broadcast right here on Facebook on dudesandbeer.com. Before we get into our show and our guest this evening, I would like to let everybody know that we are officially brought to you by Audible.com. Audible.com is a great service from Amazon.com where busy folk like myself can keep up with their reading. If you like reading mysteries, health books, self-help, all kinds of stuff, it's all there on Audible. Go online to audibletrials.com/dudesandbeer to download your free 30-day trial of Audible. You will get two free books. Also, any book that you try on Audible that, you know, you really don't end up liking a whole lot, you can swap in after you purchased it. You also get to download the books and keep them yourself. You don't have to listen to them on the service. So go on and check out audibletrials.com today. That is audibletrials.com/dudesandbeer to get your free 30-day trial membership. Tonight with us is our good friend and guest, Cajun Mystic himself. Mr. Ken Moe is here to talk to us tonight about some of the great ghost stories of the Bayou, as well as some of the awesome Cajun legends that are out there and the history behind them. Welcome once again to the broadcast. Ken Moe, how are you this evening?
Oh, doing fine. Good to be with you again. Very happy to be back on the air, telling stories and exploring these things from the Cajun country, swampland.
Yeah, it's always great having you on. I thoroughly loved having you on to talk about what it is that you do as a traiteur, as a traditional Cajun healer, and how you came about to that. But along with that knowledge, which is passed down person to person, comes a lot of the Cajun history, the unwritten Cajun history, the stories of the swamp, the traditions that are passed down through the generations. What has that been like for you to be kind of a vessel to carry these stories on to new generations, Ken?
Sort of like a legend keeper, making sure that these stories don't go away and that people will enjoy hearing them and passing them on rather than losing them. Yeah, sort of like the keeper of legends.
Well, and that's what I love about it, is that some of these stories I heard around the campfire while out hunting with my grandfather as a child, many of them I've heard about but have never had the chance to hear myself. Where would you say somebody would start if you were to start us off this evening with one Cajun tale that you really think is quintessential? Which one do you think it is, and share it with us?
The first one, I'm going to change names because I don't know who might be listening, and I may not want to be associated with the memory of their particular place, so I'm going to make false names. But back in when I was in high school, there were stories circulating about a haunted house south of here. A place called Forked Island, Kowal, and I'm just going to kind of change the names around Cameron, close to the Gulf.
For those who haven't heard before, where is here for you, Ken Moe? Because you do live in Louisiana, but just to give them a geographic area of where you're talking about.
About 30 miles straight as the crow flies to the Gulf. I'm in Kaplan, Louisiana, and it is predominantly one of the main Cajun areas. It's a heavy Cajun area. It's about 20 miles from what a lot of people might recognize as Lafayette, Louisiana, and about 200 miles from New Orleans, the main the main city for, and also about 75, 80 miles from Baton Rouge.
And what is the story behind this house that you're going to tell us?
There was story circulating that a house was haunted, and that there was some deal that had happened. Someone died, and there was some mistrust and stuff. And I could never quite get the detail, but around 1958, the Kaplan Herald, the newspaper, reported small earthquake hits, and I'm going to call it the Gaston House, which is a fictitious name, the Gaston Plantation. What was happening was the entire house shook by itself and just shaking, and the people left. And I saved the little newspaper clipping for a long time, and that was the most I had ever heard of it up until much later, around 1970. I was taking pictures. I was a photographer taking pictures for a man running for sheriff. Koch was his name, and he was not a Cajun. He didn't speak the language, and he had an interpreter with him. I was the photographer, and he had an old Cajun interpreter with him from the different people that he would go to talk, and then he would have the interpreter interpret, vote for me type stuff.
Sure.
But in this one occasion, we drove to one of the islands, and they're not really islands. They were at one time, but they're called that. And these people didn't need the French interpreter because they spoke, well, good English. In fact, they weren't really Cajuns at all. They were more like Scottish. And so, of course, even a lot of people, even though they're Scottish or German, they became Cajunized and speak the language. But anyway, we pulled up to the house, and me and the old interpreter stayed in the car, and it was a nice brick house, and Mr. Koch went down by himself. And while we were talking, the name, and I'm going to say Gaston, was familiar to me. And so I asked the old Cajun man, c'est pas ça la maison qui se posait droit des herbes, no? And what I said in French was, is that the house that was supposed to be haunted, taking a chance? And he said, oui, non, là, meaning what he was saying was, yeah, no, there. And he points to the left, and right there, right in full view, I had never noticed, was this eerie gray mansion matching the dead gray swampy background. And boy, if a place looked like a haunted house, this was it. It was deserted. Oh, okay. Then he didn't know much about it, but it was haunted, that he knew. Well, that night, the new house, the brick house, this probably has nothing really to do with the story, but it was odd that brick house burned down to the ground with the fire so hot that the metal, the iron, melted. We found out later that's not that unusual, but I find it unusual. And what was the significance there? Maybe the spirits didn't like me visiting there. But as about a couple of years ago, I started inquiring again about the house. And some of the relatives saw me on Facebook, and you know, I was inquiring, and then some of the relatives, now I don't want to say they attacked me, but sort of retaliated. The house was not haunted. It's fine. It never was haunted. This, you know, they were really supporting. We used to have a lot of fun. And I'm thinking, that house, I don't see how you can have fun there. And a little while later, I got an email from someone from that area. He said, I saw your inquiry, and I saw the rebuttals from the family, says, which they do, you know, because they don't like the notion of it. It isn't there anymore. He said it was torn down. But he said, what happened was the old man didn't believe in banks. He was a very wealthy rice farmer, and he saved his money all over the house in different places. And what happened, he had to go into the hospital, and while he was in the hospital, one of his children, or maybe more than one, went through the house and stole the money, all of the money. And when he came back, it was so traumatic. He had his wife died, he died, And then naturally, some of the children moved into the house, or one or two of the children. And that's when the haunting began, where the house would shake. And he said they would leave the house in the middle of the night because of the activities. I don't know if they ever saw anything, but it was just a lot of poltergeist-type activity. Then when they went back in, again the next night after they said maybe there's nothing to it, the same thing happened again. Then they abandoned it altogether. And that was that one house that is very interesting. The other story that I want to tell you is one in Gaydon, which is about 16 miles from here. Back around 1935, a good storyteller named McDaniel, a friend of my father's, had come and he said, they were talking about ghosts, and he said, there was a house in Gaydon that was very haunted, one side of the house. The other side, the old man and old lady lived on that side, and the other side was haunted. So down in here in Kaplan, the details of the story might be a little bit different, but the details of the story was sort of like witness protection program for one of Al Capone's Sicilian mafia men. Ended up with him hiding out over here. And they were kind of like taking care of him, watching him, because he was paying them money. And this Sicilian mafia carried a .45 with them all the time. And while they were talking about this haunted house in Gaydon, he scoffed at it, and he made a bet with him that he could, and nobody would spend the night there. And he says, I'll bet you he will. So they drove him out to the house in the country, in Gaydon. And they met the old couple in the front of the front side of the house, and they asked if he could spend the night on the other side, and they agreed, you know, he would take his chance. And he said, we'll pick you up at sunrise tomorrow. Okay, now here's Mr. McDaniel told me the story. He was a young boy at the time and a mechanic, so he did the driving for a lot of the people in that kind of situation. So he said, the next morning, as we're driving back to go get by driving to get down to pick him up, coming down the middle of the road is this dark-complected Sicilian who is somewhat pale now, barefooted. And when they pull up, he said, he got in the car and he says, turn around and head back to Kaplan. And what happened? And this was his story, which was incomplete. He says he stayed with the old couple until the sun went down. Then he went to that haunted part, which was there was no furniture except for a small bed. And he kept his .45, and all he did was take his shoes off, and he held the gun in his hand, because if anybody was going to try to pretend to be ghosts, he had no qualms about shooting them. So he laid down in the bed. And he was kind of drifting off to sleep when he noticed the ceiling seemed to be getting closer. The bed was rising with him, and there was a large picture window. He could see the moonlight shining into the room. And also, too, he had the kerosene lamp lit. There was no electricity in the house. And he jumped off the bed onto the ground, which is one of those high 15-foot high ceiling houses. And he's passing his hand around looking for wires or anything. And while he was not particularly afraid of that, whatever happened next, he didn't say. And that was what drove him out to walk. Left his shoes behind and took off on foot, heading back to a 16-mile hike. This happened about 3 o'clock in the morning with the activity, and that was that particular ghost story. Okay, one of my first ghost stories, now these were all like legendary ghost stories for this area. My first encounter with the person-to-person ghost story was my friend Elsie Melchior, who had come to visit. And this story has been made into college books, a Japanese television station called Unbelievable came down and did a series on it. And it's even in a book called Ghost Along the Bayou by Christine Word, and it was published in Strange Magazine. And here's the story. In the spring of October 20th, 1969. Now, Elsie Melchior was a personal friend of mine for 40 years. In fact, he's passed now as pallbearer, and he maintained truth to the story until the end. But his business associate was Charlie, and that was his real name. I'm hesitating using, and Elsie said, I don't mind you using my name because the story is true and I have nothing to hide.
Sure.
But they were driving down Highway 167 about 1:30 in the afternoon. It was a cool but comfortable day. So they had their windows rolled down in their 1969 automobile. After driving for a while, they noticed a very old turtleback car traveling in the next lane over. And Elsie's a collector of old things, and he admired the car because it was in pristine condition. And they pulled up alongside of it, matching its speed. It was mint, he said, and it was an orange license plate dated 1940. They thought perhaps that it was off to a car show, or maybe it belonged to a collector. But what was truly strange was that the driver, a young woman who appeared herself vintage, she wore, like he said, it looked like 1940s clothes, and there was a child in the passenger seat, same like with 1940s clothing. He doesn't know if the child was a girl, boy or girl. But their confusion, he wanted to pull up and give her the high sound, good job, appreciate. But their confusion turned to urgency when they realized that the young woman was animated in distress. She appeared to be on the verge of tears. Her window was rolled up, even though it was a cool day, and LC's car was, the windows were down, and she was dressed like it was winter. This prompted LC to ask the woman, mouthing with the words and motioning with his hand through her rolled up car window, if she needed help. Do you need help? And she nodded yes. It seemed like she nodded yes because they didn't hear her. So he motioned her to pull over. And she nodded again, okay. So Elsie and Charlie then drove in front of her car, pulled over to the side of the road, and parked. And when they turned to look back at the woman and her old car, expecting her to be pulled up behind him, she had vanished. They were alone, car, everything gone. At that moment, another car pulled up behind Elsie and Charlie, and the driver of that car jumped out, himself panicked, banging on the window as he came to Elsie's car and asked, what just happened to the car in front of y'all? And from his point of view, it had simply blinked out of existence. And they talked for a moment, and he said, I thought y'all had sideswiped it or something, and that's why y'all pulled over to the side. And then all of a sudden, I didn't see your car because her car was in the way. And then all of a sudden, I see your car because her car was gone. And they spoke about it and walked around into this area. And I passed this area on 167 all the time. It's a four-lane now, but back then it was a two-lane. And there's no ditch, no side road. There's nothing. In fact, the little store that's not far is always a marker event for that time. But they talked for a moment. And they were in a daze for about an hour. The woman and her car were simply gone, and Charlie wanted to keep the event a secret. But the other man, the third man, said, we have to report this incident. Something happened. And so Elsie and Charlie said, what are we going to report? And said, you can report, yeah, but we don't want to be in, we're not going to be involved with it.
Well, that's the curiosity, is, you know, do you report it and really sound like a crazy person? Did they report it?
They never did, but he stated it. Charlie just went on to some other line of business. Elsie was a claims adjuster for an insurance company, and he kept, the other man was from Texas, I think, Dallas, and he kept in touch with Elsie for years, and they kept talking about it. But when Elsie was telling me that, I began questioning him. Elsie, this was in broad daylight. Yeah. He heard the tires on the gravel, you know, the little gravel on the side of the highway, as they hit her tires, pulled over. Very physical. And she was looking down at your car because the low profile of the 69 car as compared with a high 40 car.
Sure.
She was scared. You know, I said, Elsie, I don't think you saw a ghost. I think he saw someone that passed through a time slip, a time traveler. And he says, what? How, what, she has a time machine? No. I said, there are many stories of people who, in, if you watch now on the History Channel and you watch quantum physics, quantum mechanics, parallel universes, portals, openings, you can kind of gather that theoretically there might be a time, an opening, where someone from the past can slip into our time zone momentarily.
Sure.
And return back to their time. But what makes me say that, her time, where she came from, was cold. You said she was bundled up. Oh. And that panic look down that she was looking at your car. Think of it. You are 1940, and here's a 1969 car looking like a spaceship by your comparison. Pulling up to yours, you're wondering, what the hell is this pulling up alongside of me? And she's very lost. And so the thing is, like the lost Dutchman, did she just go back into her world and wondered, what did she see? And I often wondered, Elsie, had you made it in time to get out of the car and walk up to her car and maybe put your hand on her car?
Back
to 1940.
well, and you know, it's interesting. I remember last time you were on, we got into a huge conversation about quantum physics, quantum mechanics, and some of the concepts there, and you have a great understanding of a lot of the broad stroke concepts of these things, and to say that that may possibly have been a time traveler or somebody, at least, I mean, we say time traveler whenever we use that term, people immediately think it's somebody like your friend with a time machine, you know, somebody traveling. Go ahead.
He had never heard of that concept of a possible a four-dimensional portal. He, to him, like he said, it had to be like H.G. Wells' time travel machine.
Yeah.
And so, because he was telling me a ghost story, but I said, it don't sound like a ghost story. And I've heard many, many stories about it, especially with the web, Google today, you can... My story is all over the Google in more time travel, and you'll find it. The other story, which was happened to my wife, I'm a magician, and I was doing shows. I was doing a show in St. Martinville at an old Victorian house, and this guy was just living there temporarily because he worked for an oil company, and he had his own home, but he was sort of renting this place out, and he was leaving and didn't leave because he wanted to stay there to have his child's birthday party celebrated. And so that was setting up in the living room of this ancient Victorian mansion in St. Martinville. And my wife is standing next to him, and she turns, she said, "Did you just touch me?" I said, "No." And she felt a small hand touch her 2-3 times on the back of her leg. And she said, "I know it felt like, I mean, it wasn't like a muscle spasm or anything. She said, something touched me." And I puzzled about it. After the show, as I collected my money, and I kind of, he was with a bunch of his friends on the porch. And I kind of mentioned, I said, "Oh, it's an old house. It wouldn't be haunted." And all his friends laughed. And they're all cutting up. So I walked away. That's the end of that. And as I'm walking away, my wife was in the car across the street after we had packed up. I heard a whistle, and I turned and between the two houses, there comes the owner, the one I was just asking that. And he said, "Why did you ask that question?" And I said, "Well, my wife felt something touch her in the house." Yeah, he says, "I'll be dying to get out of here." He says, "It's upstairs. There's something up there. We hear like a child playing and throwing a ball and everything." And my little girl sleeps upstairs. And he said, "I tell her if ever you got to get up in the night to call me because I don't want you coming down the stairs in the nighttime."
Oh, wow.
"By yourself." And he says, one morning she's in the bed with us. And he said, "Honey," he said, "what are you doing? You came down the stairs by yourself. I told you to call me, not to come down the stairs by yourself." And she said, "But Daddy, I did call. Somebody brought me down the stairs." Wow.
Yeah.
It wasn't him. And I had never heard of a ghost being... And in the research of ghostly activity, theoretically, now since... I never like to say I know what ghosts are. I don't know what they are. But theoretically, energy is recorded on the environment. and played back like a needle in a record groove, if anyone still remembers what a record sure. groove is. But and it's sort of looped in a replay, and there's no interaction. It's sort of watching a video film happening over and over, like Civil War scenes reenacted. And with the other type of apparitions, there seems to be a real-time connection, sort of like if this spirit, this ghost, can you actually carry a child down the stairs? And it trigger items like music, clothes, props, can open the portal for communication such as that. And I posted a very curious question one time to some ghost hunters. Who is the millinery on the other side that manufactures the clothes? Did the clothes die with them? I mean, why are they dressed in the yeah. clothes that they had on Earth? Who is making the clothes over there? And it really caused a lot of problems. I didn't mean it to make trouble, but well, being skeptic.
Well, and also you have to consider psychologically, you know, whenever you're talking about like, well, maybe this is a mass hysteria, something like that. Even in places where hauntings aren't necessarily like widespread known, you know, like Gettysburg, things like that. There are a lot of places where the hauntings are so well known that, of course, somebody might say that they saw the spirit wearing this because that's what the spirit's been seen wearing. But in places that are not well known, it's interesting to see the fact that people still report the same thing.
Yeah. Isn't that something? And like I said, since we really don't know, who can surmise why? Yeah, it's just psychologically or maybe just some sort of, I don't know. Another now this type of ghost story is very common. I picked up a hitchhiker from Kaplan when must have been 58. His name is Roy Morgan.
See, the way your story starts off is why I've never picked up a hitchhiker. Just, I mean, just so you know, like the whole reason I never have is because, like, my God, it always leads to some kind of horror story. I don't want to be a helpful human being.
Yeah.
It's like, this is how so many horror movies start out. Don't pick up the hitchhiker, Ken. Don't pick up the, oh, God, he picked up the hitchhiker. Go ahead, Ken. Go ahead.
I recognized him. He was from Kaplan. His name was Roy Morgan. And it was a foggy night, and I almost didn't pick him up because it was foggy, and I wasn't sure it was him. And when he got to the car, I was relieved to see that it was him. And I said, he got in, I said, it's kind of a spooky night. He said, I thought maybe, and I didn't want to run into any ghosts. And he said, you believe in ghosts, Mr. Ken? Oh, I said, no, I was just saying that. And he said, I'm going to tell you something. I'll tell you a story, something really scary. He said, my little nephew was dying of leukemia in New Orleans last year, or maybe 2 years ago. And we had gone to see him in New Orleans, and he was on kind of not doing good at all. And this was 1958, when there was not much hope for that. And he was very sick, and he said, "Le parrain," that's what he called his Roy Morgan, the little nephew, "Parrain, you're never going to see me again alive." Roy said, "Oh yeah, yeah. Don't worry about that. You're going to be all right." And he said, "Kenna, we left. You know, that night we came back to Kaplan, and I was in my room, and he had a big four-poster bed, big posts in a big round walnut poster." He says the light was on in the hall, and I turned, and there he was standing in the hall, right in the doorway. And smiling, and he was waving at me, and he vanished. And I grabbed it, and he said, I grabbed that post on that bed, and I started screaming, and my parents came running. "What's the matter with you?" And he said, and he named the little boy, I don't remember the little boy's name, he was there in the doorway, and he can't be. Well, typically, again, in a few minutes, the phone rang from the hospital reporting that the little boy at that precise time had passed. I've heard story, even in my own family, my Uncle Sam, his wife, Ursula, was in the hospital. And she wasn't at that death door, but Uncle Sam was in his 80s, so he stayed behind. So, and this is in my family. And she died all of a sudden at the hospital, and they were saying, "Oh, too bad you don't speak French, because the story is so much better in French, because these are all French-speaking people. But he said, we're going to wait till the morning to tell Papa, because we don't want to shock him. This was about 2 o'clock in the morning. So when they got back to the house on Bourke Street, the light was on in the, all over the house. And they got down, and Uncle Sam was up, and he was in a frantic. He says, his wife, Ursula, is here in the house somewhere, and I can't find her. And what's the matter? No, Papa, you're dreaming. No, I was laying in bed, and she came to the bed, and she grabbed my face and said, goodbye. We're going to meet in the sky. I have to go. And she, à la partie moyenne dans la cuisine, I mean, he walked away to the kitchen, and he jumped out of bed to follow her, and he couldn't find her. And she's hiding in the house somewhere. And then they had to tell her, no, Papa, it was a dream. She's gone. She died. Tarive. Now that's in French. Tarive. It's funny. We condition ourselves. It's a dream. Even though his experience was very real, that he had seen it. Now, there are many, many stories like that, of course. And I don't know why they choose to come and visit before, but that's a common story where they come to say goodbye.
Yeah, and so many times across cultures, Ken, we hear the same echoes of stories, maybe not the same details, but we hear the same thing where be it somebody predicting their own death, knowing that something's going to happen, somebody stopping by to visit shortly after they passed, and then somebody finds out that that person has passed away, even though they live across the country. In your years as a mystic, as a traiteur, as a Cajun healer, have you come to accept or deny the presence of the paranormal? Because just because you're the curator of stories and a culture of folklore does not necessarily mean that you are a believer. You know what I mean? I mean, it doesn't mean that you drink the Kool-Aid, right?
That's right. And especially being a magician, I know the I know what you mean. But like I had said one time, for paranormal activity, when tapping into any paranormal activity, it may not just be of a supernatural origin, although it probably is, but what we call define as supernatural may be scientifically the ability to somehow these areas to manipulate quantum reality fields, that there's more of a science to it.
Sure.
Because, there's more of a science, because what we call, we try to measure things electronically with devices, but in this trying to measure that field, see, there's a word, if I can remember, psychotechnics, I think, is the word for it. It's the study of interactions between matter, and I'm going to go off on the deep end here, but...
Go ahead.
The interaction between matter and energy and consciousness, as found in these parapsychology events, and the ability of energy produced by mental effort to have a physical effect on people and effects, is called psychotronics. It's like maybe the mind is more powerful in connection. I don't know. It goes off. Let me jump off onto this other one, bilocation, doppelganger. Okay. Speaking about the mind.
Okay.
Here's one story. The postal worker who contacted me and worried, he thought maybe something had happened, which was an advertisement. Cajuns have a way of seeing something and thinking it was an advertisement. That means a warning. You are warning. It's a harbinger of something to come. But he was getting ready to, he was in a pool, a car that would come pick him up, the other workers, and he would have to be dressed and waiting in the living room when the car pulled up to pick him up, because he didn't have a car, or maybe it wasn't his week to drive. But he was dressed in the living room waiting to work. It was early since he was in a postal worker, this is very early in the morning. And so his wife was finishing up in the kitchen, and when she passed by the bedroom, she looked into the bedroom, and he is sitting still in his pajamas on the side of the bed. And she says, "Quoi tu fais? Tu vas pas te ranger pour aller à l'ouvrage?" And she says, "What are you doing? You're not going to get dressed to go to work?" And when she said that, she heard him in the living room say, "What?" And she turns, and then she turns back to look into the doorway, and he's gone. And this is something called bilocation. Doppelganger. Now, I know this to be a fact because I have been seen many times. My own daughter saw me one time in the mall. She said she was working at one of the sunglass hut, and you passed in the hall right in front of the opening of the sunglass hut with your top hat and your cape like you're going to a show. And I says, "I'll be darned, he's not even going to consume." So she, excuse me, so I'm going to fuss at my dad. He ran out in the mall. That was Acadiana Mall. I wasn't there. Gone. Then another time, another lady, it was at the Cajun Dome. This bilocation doppelganger actor spoke to her. She said, you came to me, and I said, "Are you doing a show here?" And you said, "Yeah, but I'm busy. I'll come back and talk to you." I was not at the. There's about three or four occasions where I have been seen like that. So it's puzzling, very puzzling. Go ahead. You had something that you wanted to add. I interrupted you.
Oh, no. That's all right. I mean, it's my whole point was that with all of these technologies that we have around us all the time, it's interesting that you continually bring up alternate dimensions, that you're talking about things like that. I myself am someone who, though I'm a huge fan of alien spottings, UFOs, things like that.
Oh, I am too. Yes.
And believe me, I'm sure just statistically that life exists outside of this planet and the solar system. They just released, actually, that they are finding mold in pictures being taken on the surface of Mars. So that's huge in and of itself. But I think that if anything, we were more than likely to run across somebody accidentally slipping through a time barrier, through a dimensional barrier, as you're talking about with the case of the car on Highway 167, things like that. And it's interesting how many of these hauntings, many of these spectral appearances do appear as though they're almost like a memory loop, almost like, I'm a musician, it's almost like you've used a sample pedal to start an emotion and then to stop it at a point before completion.
Wow. That's like the quantum experiment of the two-split proton.
Yeah. And, if you keep doing that, then, especially if you're talking dimensions, then of course you're going to end up with ripples across dimensions that are cross-branching all over the place, creating different alternate endings for that spirit. So,
yeah,
who's to say that
probabilities?
Who's to say that what we're watching is the same experience over and over? We may be watching the ripple through the next reality, through the next reality, through the next reality, just as it's hitting that point where the quantum realities tend to overlap. You know, we may be looking at the next thousand iterations of realities of how this person's life ended. They moved on. Don't get me wrong. They moved on. They aren't trapped like we think they are necessarily. Now a true haunting, a true possession of a building, which has happened, folks, a true entity in a building, totally different situation than what we're talking about. We're talking about like the hitchhiker on the side of the road that you pulled over and suddenly he's not there. And then you get up to the Denny's and you're like, oh my God, dude, I totally went to pick up this hitchhiker. And somebody goes, oh yeah. And then he wasn't there. That's been happening for 50 years, dude.
That's a story. That's called Resurrection Mary. Have you ever heard of that one?
Go ahead, Ken. Let us hear about Resurrection Mary.
That's Resurrection Mary. She's the girl on the side of the road that everyone picks up for 50 years, you know, and she vanishes even sometimes in the car.
Yeah, and I mean, there are so many, like I said, horror movies about that, that start off that way, or that start off with the story of Resurrection Mary.
Yeah, I think the reason for that name was that she points to where she wants to go, and it's a resurrection cemetery. Yeah, and that's why she got that name. But there are other stories of other... it's not always at that one place. There's even a place in New Orleans where someone hitchhikes in dressed in period clothes to get in the car. And where do you want to go? And they point. They said, that doesn't help me, tell me. And then when they turn, the person's gone. And that's those kind of stories are repeated all over the globe. And whatever they are, like there are probably different factions. Like you said, there might be some entity which is demonic, which is the trickster. There might be something playing that is not ghost, but some sort of ultra-terrestrial beings.
Sure.
In a parallel unit. Yeah, that. Like the Native Americans had what they call the trickster. They imitate the dead and to trick you. And there's just many, many stories like that. Being a magician one time when it was a spooky, dark, and stormy afternoon, and we had Mrs. Edith, the house worker, and the colored people, you can't call them, some black folk.
Sure.
That were in the house. And I had arranged, and without revealing how, to have some boots walk across the living room floor by itself, by my magical methods. And they opened the door. I timed it. When they opened the door, the light was, it was daytime, but it was kind of dark in the living room. And it says, yeah, well, come see, look. And these boots start walking across the floor. And that girl got so scared that years later when I was in line for Moonlight Madness supermarket sale with my mother, and she was a grown woman now, but she was with her mother, and she was a young girl at that time. And so we were in a long queue, a long line, and my mom says, y'all get in line with us. And she said, Miss Mo, she says, I don't want to insult you, but my daughter don't want to go nowhere near your son. She thinks he's the devil. Because of that incident with the, because it caused us to go into her menstrual cycle immediately, and she had to go home.
Oh, wow.
So the effect of a trick spook, can you imagine?
Yeah.
If that had really, and before I close off, I'll give a humorous story involved, but if you have anything else to ask or say before I do that, you know, I'm sure we're winding it down to the wire here.
Well, we've got a little bit of time left, my friend, but and definitely enough time for your story. So go ahead and share that, and then I'll follow up with a question or two to kind of wrap things up.
Okay. Well, before I go into that, the other part that we may have tapped in the last time we visited was the Fipule. These Ozark Mountain lights, the ghost lights.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
Texas. Well, I was watching something on television the other day, and they were kind of recreating something, but it couldn't explain what they were seeing in the swamps or in the graveyards, but it was a plasma ball in the laboratory that they created, but that's all it did was just sort of pop up and kind of float around and disappear.
Yeah, ball lighting.
Maybe there's something. Yeah, well, it's kind of like ball lightning, but even different than that, like created by the environment, not ghosts, but because they're so frequent, and there's even a street here in Lafayette called Fipule Road, because that was where a lot of these things were seen years back. And the legends with them is that they were the spirits of unbaptized babies, and I'd never follow a fifole because back before electricity, they said it might make you think you're going to your house in the light in the woods, and it'll get you lost, or that it would, if you follow it, it'll lead you to buried treasure. But that's the fifole. But the humorous part of the story that I wanted to get to. There's a graveyard not far from where I'm at, and I was back when I was a teenager, sort of like the Fonz, and there was this confectionery group that everyone gathered around, and there was a guy there that's sort of like the Fonz. His name was Dallas, and he lived in the back of the confectionery. He had got out of the army, and he was just categorically a loser. He was just a braggart, full of himself. And we just always egged him on. And they were talking about how if you walk through the, this was Halloween night. They said, if you walk through the graveyard on Halloween night, you're going to see a ghost. And Dallas said, I'll bet you any kind of money I'll walk through the graveyard at midnight. And I'm not going to see, I'm not afraid of no ghosts. So while he's bragging, fella Gerald, names again, I'll call him Gerald, he conspired with some of the other guys, not necessarily me and Tom, but we were kind of listening. He says, let's bet Dallas $5. Now, this is 1956. That's a lot of money. Let's bet Dallas $5 at midnight that he won't walk through the graveyard. One end, and we'll pick him up on the other end because it sort of made like a semicircle. So Dallas, they presented him with the challenge. Oh, that's baby stuff. Well, if it's baby stuff, you want? Nah, I said, I got something better to do besides wait around midnight. So this was about 10 o'clock, and the confectionery was fixing to close. But one of the fellows there, I think we called him Crip, I'm not sure. But he says, you're all going to pay Dallas $5 to walk through the graveyard? Yeah. Can I take that bet? Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, it wasn't midnight. It was after 10. It was about 10:30 now. So we all pile up into Gerald's car. I mean, there's me, Tom, Gerald, Mallet, Crip, and I mean, we're packed in there. Tell you what. Drive to the, and it's dark, and that area is dark. I mean, this is in the country. And there's no lights, no street lights, nothing. So it makes a horseshoe semicircle. So they pull in, and they cross a bridge up over the canal, a wooden bridge. And puts out the light and said, Grip, okay, go ahead. And we're going to drive, go around the semicircle, and we'll pick you up on the other side. Well, all of a sudden, Crip chickened out. And so Gerald was so put out with him, and he starts hollering, walk, go ahead, walk through the graveyard, walk. And Crip got back in the car. No, I don't want to go. And I'm wondering, what's the matter with you, Gerald? If you don't want to go, you don't want to go. What's your problem? And he's just hollering at us. All of a sudden, way in the distance, we see a light come on at the house, which they said was the caretaker's house, a man that was sort of in charge of watching over the graveyard.
Yeah.
And someone hollers, caretaker's coming. They saw his car lights come off in the distance, light up. So me and Tom are still standing outside, and Joe goes to the edge of the graveyard, and he hollers, hey, you ghosts in the graveyard, we're leaving. You better come now or you stay behind. And I'm wondering, what's the matter? Did Gerald turn medium that he can communicate with ghosts? And he says again, we're leaving. Goodbye. If you want to come, you better come now. What's the matter? And all of a sudden, we look in the darkness of the graveyard. Here come two ghosts.
Oh,
but
man.
They weren't ghosts. They were two plants, two guys they had put in the graveyard with sheets. and they're coming running and pulling him off, and we all, he's, and Gerald, we all jump in the car, and we almost go in the canal because he didn't want to put the lights so that the, for the, to avoid the caretaker, almost go in the canal and turn into ghosts ourselves.
Oh.
But, and we go over that old wooden bridge, but that was the night that there were, really were some ghosts, but they were human ghosts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's something always to be considered. As someone who spent a little time with paranormal societies, going out and on investigations, things like that, you do have to be willing to dismiss most of what you see and hear.
Yes.
And be willing to, even if you get it on tape, be able to, and be willing to pick it apart, be willing to get rid of it and say that it is nothing of consequence. But it, to me, there is always something to be said about years and years of anecdotal evidence, years and years of people, different cultures even, giving the same stories.
Yes.
And whenever we have you on next time, I would love to get into some of those stories, some of the stories like the Rougerou, that kind of stuff, where it's not only the local Native Americans that talk about it, but the locals as well. Things that tend to cross over cultural barrier that aren't necessarily just the ghost that crosses the bridge, that kind of stuff. But
yes.
Thank you so much for coming on tonight, for keeping these stories alive, for keeping the culture of deep Louisiana alive, and a lot of these stories. It is all but forgotten to so many people.
Yeah, we're gonna go into there's three names: the Lugaru, Rougarou, and Chienlu. And the Cajuns brought it over to Canada from Eastern Europe and over here. And it's the Rougarou, the Lugaru, or the Chienlu is more prominent around Terrebonne Parish. The legend is very heavy there. I haven't heard that much of it in this area. Now, one of the things that has seemed to escape legendary here is the vampire. Now, think New Orleans because of Anne Rice. She has maybe brought that to life, but with the Cascade Girls and different stories there, but I'm not that familiar with that area. And my stories are mostly right here in the Cajun land. But I'm looking forward to coming back, and we're going to touch on all those subjects again.
Absolutely, and we always love having you on. Until next time, make sure to stop on by CajunMystic.com, everybody. That is where you can find some of these great stories by Ken, that he, not necessarily by Ken, but that Ken keeps alive, that Ken tries to keep the tradition of these things alive so that they are available for future generations.
Yes, just Google Ken Moe Time Traveler and you're going to find that story. And that one's a particular good one for me because I knew the witness and he stayed with the story until the end. And that is the most believable one besides my wife being touched by the little ghost child. Those are the two that I absolutely would bet my life on.
Yeah, because you have personal connection to them. It wasn't something that you were told. It wasn't something. And don't get me wrong. I mean, whenever you're told this by your traitor, you know, the person who taught you the craft, there's something to that. And that's the reason
that
you are keeping this alive and wanting to pass it on. And it's such a beautiful tradition. Thank you so much for your effort to keep that alive, and we will help you in that in any way that we can facilitate anytime, Ken.
Thank you, and I bid you all a good night.
And same to you. Please do hold the line for us, Ken, while you're online checking out the great work of Ken Moe at CajunMystic.com. Do make sure to stop on by DudesAndBeer.com to check out some of the great episodes that we have, as well as some of the awesome stuff like Audible. You can go and check out Audible for free for 30 days, audibletrials.com/dudesandbeer to get that promo. You can also check out the great products at DiamondCBD.com with Dudes420 is the code to use, and you will save 30% off your entire purchase there. So check out DiamondCBD.com and use the code Dudes420. Until next time, everybody, remember, if you can't be good at it. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.